from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text 27.
Visayamana Bodeva Manuputra Mahaujasa Kalasavehara Eva Saprajapataya Smita.
Vishaya, all the sages.
Manava,
all the Manus.
Deva,
all the demigods.
Manuputra,
all the descendants of Manu.
Mahaojasa,
very powerful.
Galaha,
portion of the plenary portion.
Sarve,
all collectively.
Hare,
of the Lord.
Eva,
certainly.
Sapraja Patayaha,
along with the Prajapatis.
Smita,
unknown. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. All the rishis, manus, demigods, and descendants of Manu, who are especially powerful, are plenary portions, or portions of the plenary portions of the Lord. This also includes the Prajapatis. Purport. Those who are comparatively less powerful are called Vibhuti, and those who are comparatively more powerful are called Avesh, incarnations. Om Agyanatim Nandasya Agyananjana Shilakaya Chakshu Militamina Tazmai Shri Guruvaya Namaha Mukam Karoti Vashram Pangum Langaite Grindyati Pratam Hamrunde Shri Gurum Dinatharinam Vancha Kalpatru Vishya Kripa Sumivya Eva Chapatita Nam Pavne Bhyo Vaishnavi Bhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Abhaita Gadadha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Ram Ram Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So, Krishna is the source of all incarnations. So this is leading up to the Parivasa Sutra of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which will be discussed tomorrow by whoever will be giving class. So we're hearing constantly about how Krishna is the cause of all causes. He's the beginning, he's the middle, he's the end. So we're hearing about Krishna's vibhutis, Krishna's shaktis, Krishna's different potencies, so that we can get to understand the supreme tattva of Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead. Because most of the time people want to understand just Krishna's rasas. As we see, we have so many personalities around the world who are performing Bhagavad Saptahas, specifically focusing on the Rasa Lila pastimes of Krishna. So they immaturely study Krishna's rasa without understanding Krishna's tattva. But as we see with Krishna, with Srila Prabhupada's presentation of the Vedic literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada is giving us not only Krishna's tattva but also Krishna's rasa. So we gradually get to understand the supremacy of Krishna, appreciate and accept him as the supreme truth, and then later on just dive into Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's rasa, how he relates to living entities, the nature siddhas, the nature badas in this material world, or how he relates with his devotees in the spiritual realm. So it is very important to actually understand Krishna's tattva, the position of Krishna. Hence we will read, or we've been reading about Krishna's incarnations. So as it's mentioned here, Krishna has different incarnations which are labeled as vibhutis, who are less powerful, and then you have the avesh incarnations, which are more powerful. So this basically means the potency of the activities of these incarnations show extraordinary power. So we have different types of incarnations of Krishna. Krishna himself being the source. So Krishna's name is Avatari, and everyone else is avatar. So within Krishna, all the incarnations are available. When Krishna descends, or when Krishna comes to display his qualities and pastimes, he comes with all his incarnations because he's the source of everything. So once you're with Krishna, you're with everyone, really. The demigods, the Prajapatis, the Manus, etc. So here specifically mentioned are the Rishis, the great sages, the Manus, demigods, the descendants of Manu, who are especially very powerful. So they, the Manus, the Prajapatis, they're exhibiting their potency of being the progenitors and maintaining worldly order. So they're meant to actually populate the universes with all the different species of life. Therefore, we hear how, you know, the mothers of the planet or the different demigoddesses, they're giving birth to different species of life. And we understand that Krishna actually incarnates himself in as many species of life as they are. Of course, Krishna's expansions are unlimited. So we can get to understand just how powerful Krishna is as the avatari, that all these parts and parcels of Krishna have been given potency by him, but Krishna remains supreme as the avatari. The Manus who live, there's 14 Manus, of course, in the scope of Lord Brahma. So in a month of Lord Brahma, there are about 420 Manus. So of course we understand that our 1 day of the demigod is equal to our 6 months. So everything is a bit extended in the higher realm. If we can try and imagine how this 1 day, imagine our 1 day being equal to 6 months. So imagine you have Mangal Arati and then you have service non-stop for 6 months and then you go to bed after 6 months, you wake up again the next day. So it's quite fascinating how time itself acts in the higher regions. So the responsibilities of the Manus, of course, in the day of Brahma, they are meant to populate the universe, give guidance to the universe in the different species, not only human beings, because sometimes people are just thinking, you know, the animals and all these different entities are just mutations, they just kind of popped up. I was reading a quote somewhere, someone sent me, well, not a quote, but one of these smart things people try and come up with against this whole theory that we just came out of nothing, we're just a creation of chance. And it was quite interesting because this person was saying, apparently once upon a time somewhere, nothing exploded, and out of that nothing, all these different personalities, different plants, different animals came into being, but it's all a result of nothing because nothing really was there and we're just a bunch of nothings floating around. So they were just using this argument, this illogical and unintelligent understanding that actually we just came out of nothing and we just, from nothing came something, right? So let's say we can have the temple very clean, very tidy, and then the next day we come in, we mess it up, you know, we throw mess everywhere, we put petals everywhere, you know, we write on the wall, or we spread Chanamrita everywhere, and then the next day we come with our friend, and then he says, you know, what happened? You know, looks like there was, you know, someone came and wrecked the temple. And we say, no, nothing happened. You know, it just kind of happened. Something happened, and then all these mats were flying, and then the petals were everything. It just came out of nothing. It wasn't a person who came and did this. It was just nothing. You know, it was kind of like a little energy just came around and started moving things around. And if you say that to someone, will think, you know, come on. And if someone breaks into a house and they want to steal stuff, so normally you find that there's papers everywhere, clothes everywhere, they were looking for money or valuable stuff. And, you know, we don't walk in and say, ooh, you know, it's by chance that everything actually is like this. It's by chance, you know, that, you know, something came in and just like opened my cupboards and took my money and my wallet and messed up my house. It just kind of happened. It's not a person. Right? If you go and tell that to the police, my dear sir, you were caught in the crime scene, you were standing in the middle of the room and the room was messed up and you couldn't find anything, you just say, no, I was just there and it just kind of happened, you know. You can't blame me. So in a sense, this this theory that we came out of nothing, and at one point there was nothing, and then there was something that just went boosh, right? And then all of a sudden there's humans, there's reptiles, there's, you know, animals on land and water that fly, so many different things. So it just sounds really illogical, unintelligent. So this is how we understand Krishna's potency, that actually nothing in material existence just happens by chance. That Krishna is the he's the creative function. Krishna is the basis of everything that happens in material and spiritual creation by his different shaktis, by his different energies. So some of them may be demigods who are given administrative roles and duties by Krishna himself to control certain material elements, to control the sun, to control the wind, to control the water, the oceans, etc. So these tiny energies are, these living entities, they are given this potency by Krishna himself so that things may actually go on undisturbed in material creation. So you have different demigods. There's millions, 33 million demigods out there primarily. And then you have other small ones who are assisting with the functioning of the material cosmos. So these are different energies of Krishna. It's not that it is, well, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says, you know, he's in the material, but at the same time he always remains aloof. And he is the material energy, but at the same time he's not. So this, if we don't understand how Krishna as a tattva works, then we'll think Krishna is an ordinary living entity. Then we'll just think, well, how can, if we don't understand Krishna and his potencies, we'll just take Krishna to be an ordinary living entity. Right? We'll just, if we read how Krishna left the planet, he got shot on the foot, or he died, oh, that's what normal people do, you shoot them, you die. And we'll just think, oh, it's just, Krishna's just a normal person. But if you understand Krishna's tattva, that, you know, Krishna can, you know, Krishna is Satchit Ananda. Even when he comes in the material world, he comes in his original body. So it is a trick by Krishna just to bewilder the atheistic, to bewilder those who have no faith in him, that they may think, oh, Krishna is subject to birth and death, to the wheel of karma, like everyone else. But understanding Krishna to be the source of everything, we understand his supreme truth, and therefore we're able to comprehend that Krishna actually has potencies. And his potencies, you know, it's just a spark of his splendor. It's just something so small. It's nothing major for Krishna to create the material world. It's just a quarter of his creation. And he gives that to his living entities, his parts and parcels, and he empowers those living entities, as we've been hearing. We have these scheduled incarnations, like Ramachandra, Matsya, Hamsa, Danvantari, Mohini Muti, so many energy expansions of Krishna that will be listed again in the second canto and discussed again by Srila Prabhupada. So we hear about them in the beginning of the first canto to establish that this Bhagavatam is meant to put us to a point where we're understanding that Krishna is the source of everything. All these wonderful activities that we might see by very, very powerful living entities, they are not supreme, they are not Brahman. Although sometimes they are referred to as Bhagavan. Sometimes Lord Brahma is referred to as Bhagavan. Sometimes Narada Muni is referred to as Brahma. Sorry, Bhagavan, Lord Shiva, etc. But they are never referred to as the supreme Bhagavan. That only is Krishna. So they have tiny potencies, they're given these potencies by Krishna for specific reasons. Like we heard about Lord Buddha, how he came to bewilder the atheists, drive them away from trying to follow the Vedas because they were committing much of an offense by using the Vedic literature unjustly. Then we hear about different expansions like Prithu Maharaj, right? With whom, when he ruled, you know, the earth was just eternally flourishing with opulence. We have the Pandava brothers, Maharaj Yudhisthira, who was Dharma himself, and how he was ruling the planet based on the principles left by Krishna, instructed by Maharaj Bhishma while he was lying in his bed of arrows. So these different vibhutis or these avesh incarnations, they have their origin. They are their thread, their foundation, their whole basis is coming through the potency of Krishna directly. So at any time Krishna can unwind, or at any time Krishna can remove their potency, because Krishna is supremely independent. We see with the king of the heavens, Lord Indra, sometimes Krishna takes his potencies away. Sometimes Krishna sends him down to the material world where he has to take birth among the animal species, just to show that actually you can become covered by my Maya, by my material energy. But when Krishna is in, Krishna can't become covered by the material energy. It doesn't work like that. So all the above mentioned incarnations, they are different portions or parts or plenary portions of the original personality of Godhead Krishna. So from our Leela avatars to our Purusha avatars, to the Manvantaras, to the Shakti Avesh avatars, they are but nothing but plenary portions or parts of portions of portions of Krishna. But Krishna remains as the original. Like you have your original candle. You can light so many candles in the room, but you always have an original one. Well, you know how they have in the Olympics? You know, they carry this, what do they call it? Baton? Torch? Not torch. But like they have this thing where they run from, I don't know, I don't understand why they chase the wind like that. So we have one person, let's say it's in Athens, they will run from a certain part of the world and they keep on passing this torch of light so that they can put actually on the in the Olympic stadium where the grand opening is going to be. So they keep on passing this torch, but there is no really, there is only that one main torch, and with that torch some people sometimes steal a little bit of fire to say, ooh, we had some of the fire from the Olympic flame, blah blah blah. So no one can actually defeat Krishna and say, oh well, I have my potencies from Krishna, right? I have this body from Krishna, I will act like it's mine and I created it. I have this mind and intelligence from Krishna, I'll act like it's mine and I've created it and I'm building it, I'm making it strong, and I'm going to become God. Like you have in the Bhagavad Gita, it's explaining in the 8th chapter about the different, 7th chapter, about different personalities who proclaim themselves to be God. Right? So they have some mind, they have some intelligence, and they use that to proclaim themselves to be God, or they study some ancient text and then they remember that they're God. Right? So they're, it's kind of like Prabhupada would say, you walk up a ladder and someone is assisting you. As soon as you get to the top of your destination, you kick the ladder. You kick it down, you say, well, I'm here now and it's because of me. I'm the greatest now. So armchair speculators, great philosophers, great thinkers, they differentiate themselves or they separate themselves from Krishna's energy, from Krishna's potency to actually give them intelligence, to actually give them strength or the understanding to know Krishna. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Mata Smiti Jnanam Abahonam Cha, that he gives knowledge, he gives remembrance, and he gives forgetfulness. So even just to learn something, we require Krishna's creative energy. Even just to forget, we require Krishna's energy. To become knowledgeable, to forget, to remember Krishna, we're basically at Krishna's mercy all the time. So even the greatest Lord Brahma, who's the first created being, right? He has no mother, no father, because in the beginning there was no living entities. It was just the Lord lying on the causal ocean, and Brahma appeared from the lotus flower that was growing from the stem. So Brahma, we could say he's unborn because he doesn't have any parents. He's coming directly from Vishnu. So even Lord Brahma had to be guided. The most intelligent, you know, design of this material creation, well, secondary creator, he had to be guided by Krishna. although he, you know, we see Brahma, you know, how is it that he created, you know, all these universes, you know, if he's this one universe and our bodies, etc., so he must be supreme. But he's getting all those creative energies and functions from Krishna himself. And that is why in the beginning he was taught to perform sacrifice, to perform tapasya, for the purpose of actually being able to carry out his function. He had to produce the prajapatis, the nine specific prajapatis, the manus, to populate the universe so that the living entities would come and try and lord it over material nature, which is what they wanted. So even Lord Brahma, the most intelligent living being, gets his intelligence from Krishna. He gets everything from Krishna. Independently, he could not perform any of the activities or any of his duties. So he tried by himself to go down the stem, and he saw nothing but darkness in the water. He went up, he didn't know what to do. And then Krishna eventually told him, just perform some tapasya, austerity. And Krishna revealed everything within the heart of Lord Brahma in the four sleep slokas of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And from that point on, the entire Sampradaya grew, and Brahma taught that knowledge to his son, Sri Narada Muni, and like that the parampara system continues. And the importance of actually having a parampara system is because this knowledge then remains contained originally from Lord Brahma to Narada Muni to Vyasadev, to Sukadev Goswami, Maharaj Parikshit, Sutta Goswami, Maitreya Rishi. So many great sages are bringing down this ancient knowledge which came from Lord Krishna himself. So it's important that we always understand that belonging to a bona fide parampara system or disciplic succession saves us from misinterpreting what's been given in the Vedic literatures. But we have our different versions of Bhagavad Gita. We have different rulers, we have different people in society who are not qualified to actually lead common men. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that you know, whatever great actions, you know, whatever actions a great man performs, common men will follow. So if you're Bill Clinton or George Bush, or if you're, I don't know, Steve Apple, whoever you may be, whatever you do, people will look at you because they see you as great, because you have some opulence, some insignificant opulence of either wealth, beauty, renunciation, fame, knowledge. Because you have a little bit of that, you're recognized as being great. So people will follow you. So because the Raja Rishis, the great saints, the kings, they had this knowledge because they were guided by the Brahman, class of people in society, they were actually spiritually minded at the same time. Like we have, you know, Prithu Maharaj, Ambarish Maharaj, Maharaj Yudhisthira, etc. So the saints, the kings, were given this great knowledge by Krishna so that they would be able to teach their citizens or those who depend on them. And in that way, this knowledge would keep on going. But Krishna explains that in due course of time, it got lost because the kings themselves, they lost their spiritual understanding. And especially in Kali Yuga, everyone is, you know, the society of blind leading the blind. So we have democracy, we have monarchs, we have utilitarian systems, or we have so many isms that are just being led by people who are of no knowledge. And in that way, the common masses of people, the ignorant, sometimes people say the innocent personalities, they are led astray by these so-called kingly rulers of the planet. And in that way, that is why Prabhupada would always mention that we need a Brahminical class to actually guide society. Right now, society is moving without a head. Right? If you give a very intense example, you know, if you've ever seen how a chicken's head is cut off, you know, when the head is off, the chicken just goes everywhere. Like, you know, back where I grew up, you know, chopping a chicken's head off was a common affair, unfortunately. So as soon as the head is off, the chicken just starts flying all over the show. It goes everywhere. It doesn't know, it hits, it goes, it tries to go, it just does things. So society is like that. There's no head, there's no guidance from the Brahmanas. And therefore everyone is kind of like thinking, yeah, democracy, yeah, one state, one nation, globalism, capitalism, socialism, what should we do? Right, this policy, that policy. So everyone's body's flapping around, you know, like a chicken. And the entire society is flapping around because we actually don't have heads in society. We don't have Brahminical people in society. And Bhagavatam explains that, and Bhagavad Gita, that a society that does not offer protection to women, children, the elderly, cows, and the Brahminical class will never be successful. It will just never happen. As long as there's that kind of exploitation and animal slaughter, there will never be this world peace that people keep speaking about. And we hear every year in the Miss Universe and Miss World pageant, what would you like? And they say world peace. Everyone wants peace. Everyone wants happiness, but they don't know how to get it or what the real self is, because if we understand our true identity, then we can actually venture out to try and become happy in life. But as long as we're dead bodies flapping around, we bump into each other, we step on each other's toes, we poke each other, we do so many things. So this is all coming from a misdirected civilization. And most times, like right now, we're having protests in the city. There's these hippies that are camping out by occupation. Yeah, they're camping out somewhere in the city just before after Fed Square. So they're protesting against, you know, capitalism and how, you know, 1% of the world's population have 99% of the wealth. The gap between the rich and the poor is just escalating, and capitalism is exploitation, etc., etc. And, you know, they do recognize that there's a lot of injustice that's going on. People who are put in position in power, they are greedy, really. And I was thinking, at the end of the day, you know, we can prostrate ourselves in front of court. You know, some people go on nudity marches and stuff, or they hold up signs. You know, we can do so many things, but it's not going to change anything. And I was thinking, now they're going to camp out for so long, and it's not going to change the heart of, you know, those people living in somewhere who are enjoying life. So the way to change people is not just by externally telling them to change, but as Prabhupada explains, if only we can get rid of the greed that is instilled in the heart of wanting to enjoy the material energy, and the expansions of that enjoyment through family, community, nation, etc., then all these problems will always be there. I mean, it's nice to recognize that there's these things going on, but we cannot solve material problems with material solutions. Material problems can only be solved with spiritual solutions. Understanding what matter is, understanding what Krishna's energy does. It makes you forget, it makes you a bit crazy, it makes you dull, it makes you inert, it makes you passionate in ignorance. This is Krishna's material energy. How not to get affected by his divi energy as a conditioned soul? Don't embrace it. Just don't embrace the material energy. Sense gratification is there for everyone. But you have the transcendentalists and you have the foolish personalities. So the transcendentalist, although he's on the path, I'm reading in second canto, is explaining how, you know, even the transcendentalist, he may become, no, actually it wasn't the second canto. I was reading Bhagavad Gita chapter 2 last night, and Prabhupada was explaining that you have those transcendental personalities who, they are not committing sinful activity, nor are they agitated by their proclivity to perform sinful actions, although they might have material desires. And Prabhupada said that is a sadaka. A sadaka, of course, we take to the process, we embrace the process of devotional service, we still have our conditioned nature from previous births. And although that's still there, still we do not go out and perform those sinful activities because there's a higher taste that we're now being introduced to. And I was telling to a friend of mine, I was saying, he was asking, so how is it, what does this mean? And I was thinking, you know, at a young age, the Bhagavatam explains, you know, between the ages of 18 to 30, you know, the human body, male and female, is like a blazing inferno, which means your hormones are going wild. Like your hormones are telling you, I want to enjoy, I want to enjoy. So we see that every day, people are just going out and enjoying. But why is it that a devotee, although still in a way conditioned, we still have a material body, but we're not taking these pushings so seriously? The material desires are there. We still have our aparabdha karma, which will act from a previous birth. The pushings are there, but the difference is we have a higher taste. So we might be feeling like, I want to be sinful, I want to do this and that, but we won't do it because we have higher knowledge. And in that way, Prabhupada was explaining, the sadhaka, he may have material desires and he may be inflicted by all these different things, but still he does not act on those desires because he has a higher taste. And this is where knowledge is very important. We get to understand how Krishna's energies, how the modes act upon us, and how we shouldn't take them so seriously. You know, just like, you know, you have some kids, you know, in the shops, you know, they start screaming and throwing tantrums on the floor, and the mothers are very expert. They know, okay, he's doing it. I'll give him 5 minutes. That's what he does, and then he'll stop. The mother doesn't take it so seriously because he knows this is what the kid does. But maybe sometimes when he starts, maybe he just spins around and screams 5 times, wanting attention. And sometimes maybe he'll do that and spin and yell and kick and break things, then maybe the mother will say, okay, maybe something's wrong. But you have your normal tantrums, right? So in the material world, our material body causes us different feelings and emotions, and we want to do certain things, but we treat it like an itch. Like, you know, when you have a rash, just ignore it. You have this desire, you want to do this, and you know it's a sinful desire. You know it's not going to enhance your Krishna consciousness, but the desire pops up because of some stock of karma. So what do you do? Prabhupada said, just ignore it. It will go away. You continue to engage in devotional service and that will go away. But if you scratch it, it'll get painful and you'll keep on desiring to scratch it. And you'll start bleeding and you'll get a mark and etc. And then the story goes on. So sometimes we can experience the philosophy in our day-to-day activities. We see how Krishna's energy is working, or you just see it in your body. You know, I have some skin problems at this point. I want to scratch myself all the time, but I can't do that because, I'll start bleeding. So you just tolerate the itch. You tolerate the itch of the modes of material nature and you engage in devotional service. And then gradually that will go away. So this is the potency of understanding Krishna's energies, how Krishna comes in his scheduled incarnations with certain potencies or with certain executive functions. Krishna's incarnations come for a specific function. Lord Buddha comes for a specific function. Dhanvantari comes for a specific reason. Lord Ramachandra came for a specific reason. Krishna and Balaram descended for a specific reason. So we understand how Krishna acts as a tattva, how he expands himself, and how he remains supremely the avatari. As we'll read out tomorrow, ete samsa kalam pusa Krishna stu Bhagavan swayam. Krishna, he's the original. You have your original labels. You have your original Nike. You have your original Adidas. You have Puma. You have original stuff. Gucci. And sometimes people claim to be that origin. And what do you get? You have like, right? For Nike. And instead of Adidas, you have Abibas. You know, it's fake. You have Gucci instead of Gucci. So we have this fakeness of the material world, the material energy. It looks like the real thing, but it's not. So the more we understand Krishna and his energies, the demigods, his different parts and parcels, we get to understand his magnificent potencies, and we get to understand his position, that only he is the supreme person and no one can surpass him. There's nothing before him and there was nothing after him. So we understand this about Krishna, his vibhutis, his shakti aves. We understand how we're his marginal energy. And then we're safe. We don't get misdirected by the material energy. And that is the safest position to be in while we're encaged in this body and in this huge body in the material world. So I'll stop there and I'll ask if there's any comments or questions. Why was what?
Why was it called Brahmanas who are looking in the direction of Kshatriyas?
Because mainly the Brahmanas were seen to be exclusively in the mode of goodness.
Yes. I mean, if they know it, that this one is the only Brahman who is themselves.
Yeah, but they needed spiritual guidance specifically because they were very much, the Kshatriyas get involved in managerial issues and administration of, you know, how the country should work, how it should function, but they also need the spiritual guidance. And the Brahmanas, their duties is to read the Shastra and teach it to others. So where you have good guidance like that, the material and spiritual life of the citizens is catered for. So the king wasn't only supposed to take care of the material side, but also the spiritual side. No, Brahmanas cannot become kings. They wouldn't. Their nature, they wouldn't. Just as, you know, when Dhruva Maharaj, he was given advice by Narada Muni just to tolerate. He's a Kshatriya. He was given the advice, just tolerate the insults by your mother. And he said, all this advice that you're giving is great, but my nature, I'm a Kshatriya. I cannot just tolerate it. I have to fight back. So the Brahmanas, they are not meant to become kings. They just read, they study, and they enlighten others about Shastra. Yes? Why does Krishna come as a vegetable? We should also understand when Krishna incarnates, because here we're hearing about Krishna's vibhutis, less powerful, and his avesh, which are more powerful. So Krishna as the super soul, sounds like Krishna the super soul is an incarnation, expanding himself. So Krishna comes through his potencies in different species. So as a vegetable, Krishna is there. In every, you know, it says, I still haven't realized this. In every atom, Krishna is there as the super soul. So basically, these incarnations are meant to tell us that Krishna is actually everything. Krishna is in everything. Krishna is everywhere. You cannot extract Krishna from anything in the material world or in the spiritual world. So in all species of life, Krishna is there. He's the directing, he's the principle of everything, the basis of everything. Okay, it's 9:15. Thank you. Grant Shrimad Bhagavatam ki. Prabhupada ki jai.